Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to a dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Yeah, we started.
Oh,
grab,
we did.
Grab that mic.
Oh, wow. It's great to be here. What a great apartment you
have. Can adjust that however you like.
And this is, I will say this. This is the first time in a long time I've seen you with a shirt on.
Oh, really?
I'm almost disappointed.
You know what? It was tough when you used to do that bit where you used to take your shirt. I was like, oh, man, he's so cute, and they're going nuts over him. And now they're going to see me take my shirt off. Forget it.
No way.
Yeah, no, a couple of times when I follow him, I was like, oh, forget it. My bit's going to, like, you know.
I mean, it's kind of a rule for male comics. Like, it's almost like if you're chiseled with six-pack abs, it's taking your shirt off on stage, not funny.
Yeah.
But if you're me, if you're you, if you're Bert Kreischer, then it's like, yes, funny. Always funny.
Yeah, a club owner once said to me, Harry, I think it's time to switch to boxers, because I used to do risky business, you know. And I said, a fat man in his underwear is funny. And he said, yeah, you're right.
It's like, well, you got me there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, like, because, and for people who haven't seen your act, first of all, you have to see Harry's act. It's never boring. That's for sure.
Thank you.
I've seen you get off stage at the Laugh Factory, 20 minutes. You've been on stage 20 minutes. You are dripping in sweat.
Nobody works harder on stage. Maybe, you know, Greg Hahn.
I used to open years ago. I opened for Chuck Berry, right? And I'd get off stage and he'd be in the wings and I'm soaking wet and he would go, "Will you on yet?" You know what I mean? Like, and I go, yeah. And he goes, people do that to me all the time. I come off stage, I'm soaking wet. We on yet? And he did the joke every night, and I had to keep laughing. Like, ah.
Yeah,
because it's Chuck Berry. And you don't want to piss off Chuck Berry. Yeah, because you opened up for a lot of bands. Like, I read that you were opening up for Chuck Berry, Gloria Estefan, the Beach Boys.
The Beach Boys, yeah. What? That was pretty cool, yeah.
How does that happen? Is it just a straight up agent being like, do you want to open for the Beach Boys?
Or back when I first hit in town and APA and then William Morris from my agents, so they started packaging me with people. And I was with Julio Iglesias and I got fired.
Why'd you get fired? Could you sing better than him?
Well, I used to, and you know what? I was going to do this whole
tour. You did a better De Niro?
I was going to do this whole tour with Julio Iglesias, and my mom was this huge fan. So I had a Reno date, and then I had an Atlantic City date. So my mom was going to come see him in Atlantic City, and she just adored him. Anyway, so William Morris, we had the same agent. They put us together. The first night, I go out there. I rehearse my act. And I used to close with a flash dance, and I would dump water on my head.
Yes.
So they were afraid of, like, all this water getting on the stage. And I said, you know, put a big piece of carpet, and it'll soak up the water, and then I'll strike my props when I get out of there.
Right.
Well, somebody decided to tape it down with this double stick tape, right?
Oh, so you couldn't take the carpet off.
The carpet came off, but the tape stayed.
Oh.
Now, all my props are gone, and there's big swatches of double stick tape on the stage, and Julio comes out, "Door the girls I love," and he gets stuck. He gets stuck to the tape, and he stops singing, and he looks in the wings, and he goes, "My foot is stuck to the floor."
Does he always sound like a vampire?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, that's also Bela Lugosi. That's also Bela Lugosi.
Hedy Basil.
But it happens three more times. He literally stepped out of his shoe. The shoe stayed there, and they had told us before the show, hey, there's going to be a big party backstage. And my wife, Laura, was just like my girlfriend at the time. So we didn't know about the whole thing with the shoe yet and all that. And so we go backstage and they go, oh, no, no one's coming back. It's not happening. Meanwhile, there's like 30 people going by us, you know.
This is like sitcom style.
And then the next day I got the call and I'm told about that. And I used to do a bit Aliens where I would have a Mexican burst out of my chest.
What?
Like, you know, like I like to be
like a prosthetic toy.
Yeah. So it was like a spoof on an Aliens coming attraction. So between the Aliens bit and him getting stuck to the floor, They said, we don't need you tonight. You know.
Wow.
And the thing is, my flight, I couldn't get a flight till the next day, and I had to hang around the hotel. And so, you know, and avoid people. And sure. we got into an elevator. We found out he was on the same floor, and they were holding the elevator for him. And there was this old woman who just couldn't wait to see him. And so they put him in another elevator, and my wife Laura and I get into the elevator with the old woman. She says, I'm his biggest fan. I'm going to see him tonight. I saw him last night. And my wife goes, what'd you think of the comedian? Awful. Awful. She didn't even wait. What'd you think of the comedian? Awful. Honey, wrong crowd. You
should die. Should you die right now. If he were standing right here in front of me, I would. Mm-hmm. Why I oughta. Oh my God, that's insane.
Is there a difference opening for music acts versus just being at what sort of requirements
I'm lucky that I have music in the act, so
yeah, hug this even more if you want.
Yeah, you know, if you know,
you can pull this
once the bit gets going and there's music playing, mm-hmm. I got them. But if they're just there to see the band and you go up there and you start to talk about yourself or whatever, yeah. They're like, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, fuck you, get off the stage.
Dude, that's the experience. Any band I ever. Well, I mean, up until recently, but when I first started in colleges, that's what I'd be doing. It's opening for frat bands that were playing at frats, because it was the only, didn't have the wherewithal to leave school and go do comedy clubs. And also, I was just kind of keeping one foot in, one foot out. So it's I'll open for bands at these frat parties, but it was the show would always start an hour late. People just wanted to see their friends, the band. No one knows who I am as a comedian. And people in college, when they think of a comedian, they're thinking of the people that they know and famous people.
Yeah,
not thinking of a fellow student.
Adam Sandler's going to come in. Yeah. You're not exactly.
Close. Yeah. You got the first name right.
Jewish.
Yeah.
Adam and Jewish.
Yeah. But they're not there to see comedy. They're there to see the band. Yeah. So
never went well.
So I fucked up a couple of times. The Beach Boys, I opened for them a couple of times. And then in Reno, no, it was Tahoe. And the tech guy was hey, man, could you do Scarface tonight? And I do this bit, Scarface sings the best of Billy Joel. So I'm like, it's 9 o'clock on a fucking Saturday, you know? So I do this in front of the Beach Boys audience, and they didn't want me the next time because I did the curse word, and their kids, when the Beach Boys' grandkids were in the audience. So I was and stupid me, I just didn't think, you know?
Yeah, because you have to think, not that, because we always kind of put ourselves in front of comedy audiences who are the loud, late, raucous audiences, not Beach Boys. You know, where it's that's the family concert.
Right, right. But also, when I started out, you know, you weren't afraid about screwing up and losing a gig like you are today. You know what I mean? Guys, they're very politically correct today, and a cruise ship, guys can get fired from a cruise ship just for, talking about pot or colleges, I don't know if you ever did colleges.
Yeah.
They're the worst.
They're awful. Yeah. I've heard... I don't do colleges anymore, but I know a lot of comics that do, and I've just heard absolute horror stories. Yeah. My favorite one was, I think it was from Darren Carter. Darren Carter, Party Starter. Yes. Shout out to the Rooster.
You can't say his name without saying Party Starter.
Starter. I remember that.
He really has brilliantly branded himself.
Yeah. And
Do you know the Muffin Man? Muffin Man, the Muffin Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know the Muffin Man?
Who lives on Drury Lane?
You have to keep saying it.
Yeah, I mean, if the Muffin Man and Darren Carter, the Party Starter. Could do some sort of combo act.
So Darren told me that he was at a college one time, and he forgot a line or something happened, and he just said, oh, God, weird. And they stopped the show because he said, oh, God.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what?
I did a NACA showcase, got a standing ovation,
mm-hmm.
killed. But I did a Pretty Woman bit, where the music is playing, yep. and I hold up the big jewelry box, and I have the girl that I pulled on stage stick her hand in, I close it. And then I react like something behind me, and I pull a gerbil out of my ass, like a stuffed gerbil. Well, because
the views
that,
of Harry Basil do not necessarily reflect those of the About Last Night podcast, and we love you, Richard Gere. Please come on the podcast.
Well, they, no matter how much I killed, they blackballed me, so they said no one was allowed to book me that week. So that whole trip was for nothing.
Wow.
But yeah. So I didn't get one gig out of it. I had to pay to go there, pay the entryway, and everybody wanted me, but they said no because of
because he simulated a fake gerbil being in his butt.
Yeah. And incidentally, if you ever do need to get a fake gerbil, go to Petco and just buy a cat toy and take the plastic out for a minute, and it stuffs very easily in your underwear, and no one can.
I mean,
tell what it is.
A hot tip from Harry Basil, right there. Yeah. Now, and I would say this because I was starting to say it at the beginning of the podcast where if people haven't seen your act, you like you've been describing, you kind of reenact scenes from movies, but then you put a twist on them.
Almost like what's his name, James Corden is doing when he has a celebrity on and they act out all of their movies.
Right.
I've been doing that
in like 3 minutes.
Yeah, I've been doing that forever, and goes from music from one movie to another movie to another movie, and I pull people out of the audience and use them.
It's a show. It's a complete show. This is not. I mean, would you call yourself a prop comic?
Yeah, I guess so. But I call myself more an impressionist, you know. And then I use the props to make whatever the bit is visually. You know, it's not like I hold up a prop and
that's the
wrote
joke.
A joke about it. Yeah. Right. So, like, as an actor, if it helps to have a gun in my hand or movie credits, like when I do Star Wars, I created the opening credits and stuff like that. It just adds to it.
Yeah, because I feel that when people call, when comics describe prop comics, there's a bit of like, fucking prop comic, you know, stuff like that. But I admire prop comics. I admire anyone that can see something, and whereas I have to write the joke, you have to see a joke, or you have to see an object and know how you can use that in a joke. And I think it's a separate talent, and it doesn't, like, it's like, okay, did the audience laugh?
Right.
Yes. Mission accomplished.
Also, I have a lot of deductions, weird deductions. You know, it's like if I try a new bit, it might cost me like, you know, $20 to $500. I built a time machine.
I remember this.
And I had it at the Comedy Store in that back room.
A DeLorean, right?
It was just this weird machine that I made with smoke machines and lights and strobe lights. And when Back to the Future was out, what I did was I went back in time and I would coordinate this with whoever was on two acts before me. And I'd ask them to stick around, and the music would play, and the lights, and the smoke machine, and then the lights would come on, and whoever was on two acts before me was on stage in the middle of their act again, doing a bit that the audience already saw them do. And then I come out from behind the curtain, and I tap them on the shoulder and go, Harry, what are you doing? You're not on yet. Yes, I am. You know, I did my time machine bit, and we went back into your act. What are you talking about? I said, you've been on already. They've already seen you, you know? And some guys were cool, you know, they were good actors. Like Blake Clark was great. Tom Wilson did it with me once.
Tom Wilson did it with you?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
That's amazing. And, he played Biff, for those of you don't know.
And then there was another guy I asked to do it, and he just didn't help. And I said, fuck it. I can't depend upon anyone else, you know?
Yeah.
I guess you're rolling the dice by hoping that the person just...
But it was a crazy idea.
What do you even come up with ideas like that? I feel like it's, you know, you're always wanting to push yourself creatively in this business. And I feel like you've been doing that from the get-go, yeah?
Yeah. You know, it's... you look at guys like Andy Kaufman, right? And how bizarre and strange he was. And he would try things on TV. Like, he didn't even test it in a club. He would do things on TV, and then you'd see the actual response, like on the Letterman show or something like
Nobody does that.
Yeah, nobody does that or takes chances like that. I think Sacha Baron Cohen is the closest to him. You know, it's a little Andy Kaufman, and also Peter Sellers, you know, which are two great people to be compared to. I remember once I did a bit, and I had a growth. And it was the 80s, and people were dressing like Don Johnson in Miami Vice, right?
Lots of white
suits. So that song was very popular. I had a pink shirt with the three buttons, and I had the light jacket, and I had the growth. And I said, all right, tonight I'm just going to go on stage, and I'm just going to shave. You know, the music is going to play. I'm going to come out looking really cool. And I had a bowl of hot water, and I just shaved. And that was all I did. And the music ended, and I was done. And I walked off stage, and Mitzi goes, what the fuck was that? I said, oh, it's just a weird bit like Andy Kaufman. Well, he's dead. Don't fucking do it again. So I never did it again.
You took chances. Why not? And now in that time you could take a chance because I feel like back in those times when you performed, your performance lived in that moment and that moment only.
Yeah, and you were trying to get You know, that was my one shot at SNL.
Was SNL something? I mean, was it as glorified then as it is now? Like, and prestigious to kind of like for comics? Like,
this was right after that one season that had Anthony Michael Hall and Robert Downey Jr.
Robert Downey Jr.
And I think they only kept a couple of people from then, and Lorne came back, so it was a big deal, and everyone was saying, oh, this is so cool, Lorne Michaels is back again. And I had a contract, I still have the contract somewhere, and it was like $700 a week or something that I was going to get. It was shitty money.
Yeah.
No, maybe it was more than that. Maybe it was like $1,700. You know, so it was already preset what you were going to get.
Right. You know? I still feel like it's, at least from what I've heard, is that it is not great money, but it's about the opportunity. And, you know, they kind of know that, like, oh, really? You don't want to take that amount of money? Well, somebody else will.
And first of all, it could lead to movie stardom, yeah, and or sitcom. Or if you're stand up and you're a great stand up, you can make great a lot of work. Fucking money. I mean, John Lovitz sells tickets. A lot of those SNL guys, they sell like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
How do you start to, we've had a lot of great impressionists on, and we're always so curious, like, where do you even start to figure out you can do that? Like, are you, you know, like most of you senior practice in the mirror by yourself?
Some you could, like, I was doing impressions since I was like in the second grade. Gotcha. And the first thing I ever did was like, I was doing like Get Smart and, you know, just characters that you saw on TV, not sure, the real person, but just those characters. And I would always do that. And then I'd impersonate, you know, teachers, or when I was a waiter, the
always
chef
funny,
or stuff like that.
Always funny when you impersonate a teacher.
Right, right. But then, also, you know, you realize, hey, I can do this voice, or, you know, I could do this face. But sometimes when you see another guy do an impression, you go, oh, that's how you do that. Like, I work with this guy, Jimmy Carroll, and he would do Ray Liotta. And I know, just saying, you know, and I heard him do it, and his voice sounded a little like Ray Liotta. So I realized, okay, I'm going to do a bit of the dialogue from the movie, but Karen, why did you do that, Karen? I'm sorry, Henry, they were in the house. They never would have found it, Karen. Why did you do that? Why did you do that? And then when I watch the movie and I go, all right, let me get a little bit more like that. But I learned from the other guy. There's a guy named Max Koch. He's a brilliant impressionist. If you ever get a chance, Google him. He does James Gandolfini. And I saw he does this thing with his mouth, and it's like, he does this thing like, hey, Christopher, what the fuck is going on here? So I said, oh, that's what you do with your mouth, and then the voice can come out of that.
Anytime I see an impressionist transform their face, obviously Jim Carrey, the ultimate example of that. Yeah. But like, I mean, you do it a bunch too. It's really, that to me is the next level shit.
Well, everyone's doing Jay Moore's Christopher Walken, right?
Yeah, everyone does his.
And Pollock does a great one too. Right. But
and then Pollock has even said on his podcast that he learned his from Jay Moore.
Yeah. And then even though Rich Little's been doing Johnny Carson for years, everybody started doing Dana Carvey's
one of some weird wild stuff.
That is weird. That is wild.
Yeah, exactly.
And Dana, I know you guys have had Dana on. And,
yeah, a few times.
I had dinner with him a couple months ago, and he was talking about you guys and how much he loves you.
Oh, cool.
And then we were talking about the church lady, and he goes, well, do you know these guys, Brad Williams and Adam Ray? They want to write a script. And I said, oh, they're so funny. You should do it, man. Lady movie would be awesome.
Yeah, there's certain characters that I feel like, I mean, look, we're tied to it like nostalgia-wise just because it's like what you can come up on. But then I feel like the transcend time and that we're so brilliant, but like we're limited in their exposure and what, like, you know, the possibilities of where that character could live. I mean, there's probably so many. I mean, I feel like even Wayne's World, like you could be, I don't know if there's a show there, but like, who wouldn't want, like, there's certain characters you just want to watch for long, like the cheerleaders.
Oh, like, I'd like to see where those guys are now. I'd like to see where Wayne and Garth are at this age.
Oh, my
whether
God.
Whether they have kids or whatnot. It's fun to
think, like,
about
one of
that.
Them running for president or working for somebody in the campaign. Like, there's a million, I think, scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
You did a really early showcase with him, didn't you? Like in Vegas, it was like, it was you, Carrey, Dyson, Louis Anderson.
That was the opening of the comedy store at the Dunes Hotel. It was and I've got this. We were on the cover of a magazine, and it says "Unknown band of zanies invade the dunes," and it was May 4th, 1984, and that was my birthday, so I was 24 years old.
Okay,
so here I am playing Vegas. And I'm closing the show. I'm like
Is this your first time doing Vegas?
This is my first time doing Vegas. I'm the last guy, and I'm on with Dice, Louis Anderson, Jim Carrey, Paul Rodriguez, Blake Clark, and Argus. And Mitzi had me close. And I was a headliner my first week. I went from having nothing, eating macaroni and cheese, to, like, you know, making $3,500 a week.
Which is no knock on mac and cheese, Kraft. We'd love for you to sponsor the podcast.
Sure, please do.
I want to hear real quick. I mean, that lineup is bonkers, but and we can all share our first Vegas. And you have so kindly provided Brad and I to be able to do Vegas regularly, which is never lost on me is how exciting it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the first time, you guys are great.
But it's like that room, the shows at the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana, which if you ever get a chance to go there for all of your comedy needs, it's the best club. And
it's great comics. It's a great setting. That room is fantastic.
The room is one of the
comedy.
Best rooms I've ever performed in.
Yeah, because the ceiling's low. You got the bar in the background.
The acoustics are good.
You have all the decorations around. You have Jerry's bar, or a
the Dean and Jerry bar.
Bar.
Yeah, all my
dwarves are hot.
Yeah.
It's really like they are. And but like the first time I remember playing Vegas, I was just like, I couldn't even fucking believe it. I was, you know, that it was cool just to be there. But then the first time that like I drive in and see, and Brad, you can attest to this, when you see you guys do have a great marquee.
We're on the strip.
And it's right on the strip, and the video and your face, and like, man, I almost cried because it was so
cool,
it
it's
was so just you know, not just a notch in the belt, but that's like a big, even just growing up, you, before even stand up became like something I was going to go into, you just know about the allure of like performing on Vegas.
Sure.
And the billboards.
Yeah,
and
you remember those old marquees that would have the Rat Pack and Don Rickles and like
Tom Jones is here.
Yes,
that's all it
yes.
was.
It just said Tom Jones is here. And you're like, wow, now I'm up there.
I mean, the fact that we're across from David Copperfield, like, you know, that's
bonkers. Billing is really cool. Rodney taught me about that. Rodney always, when I opened for Rodney at
Rodney Dangerfield,
at Bally's,
for you
and
people that don't know anything,
for you dummies,
exactly.
Yeah. So when I opened for Rodney at Bally's, I got billing, you know, on the to Rodney Dangerfield and Harry Basil. And then when he started playing the MGM before the digitals, they just had a big dirt train that they put up with his cartoon character. So he was like, man, they're not going to give you billing. I'm sorry, man. You know, and I was like, all right, it's cool, you know. But then it was, I didn't mind because I used to play the club across the street and they used to get mad if I was there the week afterwards. So now I could still do it. And also, people would see my name and they'd ask me for comps, and Ryan's tickets were $100, so I couldn't get them. But when we opened the club, even though it's an expense of cutting a new video every week and doing the artwork, it's important to have the headliners up there on the marquee.
Yeah, it is a big deal.
It is,
and it makes you look professional.
Right.
It makes you look like, oh, that's a spot where I should go watch comedy.
And it sells tickets if you're famous or you're hot, you know, or the people recognize you. Some weeks we, you know, listen, the club does great, and some weeks we do great business with just a lesser known, because the brand, the Laugh Factory brand, it's like Starbucks. But then if you have somebody who's recognizable and draws, it's great. You
want to
have them
up
as much as you can. Like,
for sure.
When we had Brad a couple weeks ago, I actually went a little extra and did a digital package around town on all the Lamar billboards.
Wow.
And then we had one, because
you know, dwarves sell tickets,
they do sell tickets.
Hey,
put a midget on a billboard.
Funny famous ones do.
Yeah.
And there's only one.
It's like, sure.
I gotta admit though, but before you came in, I was there and I was like walking around the room and going, okay, so we're gonna be able to see him, right? Because when Tanya Lee Davis comes, we have to put a platform. But you're
who's
taller.
That?
She's a little.
Tanya Lee Davis is the the only other truly touring, working dwarf comedian. And she's older than me, and she's definitely an influence, and she's amazing. And
she's hilarious.
She's strong. She's
so
funny. She's dirty. But she's really tiny. And,
You
know, that stage has been lowered. You know, the history of the room is Rodney opened up the club in the 80s. It was called Rodney's Place. And he's the first one to put a comedy club in the Tropicana. And then it was the Comedy Stop for 25 years. And then it
was Brad,
and it was Brad Garrett's comedy club. Well, Brad is like 7'5", so they lowered the stage so his head wouldn't hit the
ceiling.
Curtain that was hanging.
Yeah.
But now it's lower. So if you have comedy below the waist, like I do, like when I would drop my pants and it was a packed crowd, only the front row could see it unless it was on the cameras.
Oh,
you know, like
shit.
They can't see it because the heads of everyone in black. And so I was actually moving around the room and going, oh, he's way taller. He's way taller. We don't need.
A lot of times it's like, okay, well, if it's just my floating head, then I can't do a lot of like.
And if you do a bit
material
where you're showing humping or something funny or physical, it's going to get lost. But we have cameras too, and the guy
that
will cut. He'll cut to a side angle or something like that. But
that's another element of just the room that's really professional, and you don't see in a lot of rooms. You know,
what's that?
The
cameras,
the monitors.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the cameras,
yeah, yeah,
and the,
yeah.
And also people, because there are some. You know, the way the room is, there can. I mean, there's no bad seat, but even being in the back in the corner, it does help to have those monitors if you. It's also fun. Like, it's like being in a concert. You like to look up and see like a close up of what's going on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And if you're starting to talk to someone in the audience and we have the camera on it, the guy, you know, I have an eight channel switcher, like a like a studio. I mean, you could actually shoot a TV show if the cameras were better, you know, 4K cameras plugged into it, you know.
Now, you've been obviously both a performer and now a comedy booker and performer, so you've been on all sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of young comics listen to this show. What is the best way to get noticed by a comedy booker?
You know, people always ask me today whether it's tougher or harder, you know, and I say both. There's different aspects. Years ago, like, you know, maybe in the 80s and obviously even before that, when you started, there weren't as many things to watch. So if you did Tonight Show, you could be a star like the next day.
Right.
You know, Drew Carey's the last guy I remember doing the Tonight Show and then getting a deal and everybody knowing who he was. Oh my God, that guy last night with the glasses who did the thing with his tie. Now, you know, you can meet a comic and they go, oh, have you ever been out? Yeah, I've done the Tonight Show 30 times and you still don't know who the guy is.
Yep.
But today you can do something on your phone and it could go viral, or you can be, you know, like Russell Peters, obviously YouTube helped Russell Peters. MySpace was Dane,
right.
You know. And also even just trying to get a gig. I remember one time before the club, you know, I was involved with the Laugh Factory Club and all. I didn't have much work, and somebody sent me an email. I think it was Jimmy Walker sent me an email, and he attached like 90 people to it, right? So I looked to see who the other people were, and it was all these bookers. And I was going, holy shit, look at, I haven't been in that club in years or this and that. So I've got all these freaking emails. And then I had a clip. So I sent a couple of emails, and I said, hey, Brad, I think it was the comic strip. How you been? Haven't been there in years. I'm back on the road again. He goes, I have a fallout next week. Do you want to do it? And if I didn't, you know, have a clip ready to send, you can get a gig like that.
Yeah. So have a package ready.
So people can go on Facebook. Comics can go on Facebook and say, hey, I'm this comic. Now, of course, we have professionals. I mean, if you can't even get on stage in Hollywood, we're not going to book you in Las Vegas where people are paying $59 a ticket.
Yeah.
And they see, even if you're a host, you got to be a professional. You got to be a working professional. But that said, I still will look at tapes and look, when I say tape, everyone says tape.
Yeah.
I'll look at YouTube clips.
There's been a few buddies of mine that I've asked to bring to host, and you kindly looked at them. Now I think you use some of them in
your rotation.
Get
a professional clip. Don't have an iPhone, somebody shooting you. Don't send that to
someone. Quality matters.
And don't cut like a montage of you on stage in this club, and this club. Who gives a shit about that?
Right.
You want to see consistency. You want to see 5 solid minutes that you can hold an audience, not you doing one joke here. I can't believe how many clips I see.
Oh, really?
Of acts, like they cut together, they're at the, because maybe they were on a bringer show, you know, at the end. So they just think it's cool. They just think it's cool to be on that stage. So they'll do one joke there, and I'm going, well, I don't know how your set is, because you're just going from here to here. Now, it's one thing to do that with TV shows, like you on The Tonight Show, you on
that's a little
Conan,
different.
That's different.
Because you've already gone through the vetting process.
Because now you're going, holy shit, look at the shows.
Nobody wants to see a clip of like you at Hooters, and then you at Quiznos, and you in the parking lot of a Denny's, and you in your grandma's basement.
Exactly. Especially since you probably did the same routine at all 5 of those places, just cut the best one, you know?
Yeah. And you briefly mentioned Rodney earlier. You were his opening act for
17 years. Yeah.
How did you meet Rodney Dangerfield?
Rodney was doing a young comedian special. Now back then, ninth annual.
Yeah.
So there were a bunch of these young comedian specials, and there had been 8 before. I think they did one at the Comedy Store that Carl Reiner hosted. I think that was like maybe the 6th. So Rodney was hot. You know, Back to School. I don't think he had done Back to School yet. He had done Caddyshack, and he had done Easy Money. And they were giving him, you know, he was going to host this one special. And he goes, all right, I'm going to do it at Dangerfields in the city. So he handpicked all the guys. And, you know,
Bob Saget, Sam Kinison, Louis Anderson. So,
Rita Rudner, Yakov Smirnoff.
Rita Rudner.
Yeah.
The infamous Rita Rudner. We make Rita Rudner jokes on this podcast all the time.
Oh, wow.
So, like, we have
She's become
know.
A a callback reference out of envy. I mean, we think she's great.
Well, we just, it's so funny.
It's almost like Beetlejuice. We say it enough, maybe she'll appear on the podcast.
She may rent the 7 o'clock spot from us on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday because Rich Little is dark.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for another like legend like that, you know, that lives in town.
Well, she lives in Vegas.
She lives in Vegas, yeah. And she had one of the first residencies. I mean, I think
it was at New York or something?
Red Fox had his for years at the Hacienda, and then she was the next big residency.
You know? Sorry to interrupt, but there's a story. There's a legend of Red Fox in Vegas.
I know that story.
All right. And correct me if I get it wrong.
Okay.
So Red Fox, you know, Sanford and Son, legend. He is performing in Vegas. He is drunk off his ass. And he's got a packed showroom for his show. And they say, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Red Fox." And the band kicks in with the music. Dun-na-dun-na, dun-na-dun-na. And Red is stumbling out to the microphone. You can tell he is just beyond drunk. And he gets up to the mic. The audience is all quiet. And he just goes, "I am fucked up." Turns and starts walking off stage. And the band goes, dan it. Dan it. And Red Fox, everybody, you paid your money. You saw Red Fox. Right, go back out and gamble.
Now, that's the context of the story. But the story that I heard and Billy Crystal told it was that, well, first of all, they're an automatic pilot. That they say that, ladies and gentlemen, Red Fox, when he comes on. And ladies and gentlemen, Red Fox, when he goes off and plays the music. Well, he had a small crowd. It was like nobody in the audience, right?
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Red Fox, dan it comes out. What? 15 people. I ain't performing. Get your fucking money back, right? Walks off stage. Ladies and gentlemen, Red Fox.
I like that one better.
But one jumping ahead from the Rodney special, I did another special with Rodney a few years later, and he wanted Red Fox to be in it, right? So he goes, "Man, Red would be great in this if he, you know, like as a small part, but I know he's got a show." So Rodney calls him, and he had a speaker for Red. "Man, it's Rodney. Hey, Rodney, how are you?" He goes, "Listen, I'm doing a special. You'd be great. Are you dark on Mondays?" "Rodney, I'm dark every motherfucking day of the year."
Oh my God.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, another summer behind us, huh, Brad?
Yeah, summer's gone, but you know what? It's still hot outside.
Yeah, it's hot as balls. Global warming. Global warming is a real thing.
Thanks, Dr. Phil.
That's Al Gore, but they sound similar. You know, it is super hot, but it's also that sweat, it just won't quit. You're sweating everywhere. Well, fortunately, Al Gore, there's one company out there that's putting an end to sticky situations once and for all. Their name? Tommy John. Tommy John is a 21st century men's underwear brand that I and Brad have switched to. And I'll tell you, we're glad we did. Each pair is crafted from ultra-light, breathable fabrics. Okay, you don't think about the fabrics of your underwear until that shit's riding up on you and making it uncomfortable to maneuver around with your dick and balls, okay? You want comfortable fabrics and that are with you and not against you.
And this is exactly what Tommy John has. Comfortable fabrics, breathable fabrics, that means no riding up, ever. That means it's impossible to get a wedgie. You could go and see every bully that had you in elementary school. They could grab your underwear, yank it. No wedgie.
Just
all that would
wedgie.
Happen yeah. is they would grab it and they would look at you and go, "Wow, what is this soft fabric I'm feeling in my hands right now?"
It's Tommy John, and it's even pioneered with time-saving horizontal quick draw flies. Talk about a fucking game changer.
Dick gets out so quick.
They really thought of everything to help dudes feel more comfortable. From the world's most innovative underwear to socks that stay up all day and patented undershirts that never, I repeat, never, they never come untucked. There are all sorts of exciting things going on at Tommy John. And they also just opened up the first ever Tommy John store, which is huge because you're still going outdoors. You may be going to the mall, okay? At the King of Prussia Mall and a pop-up store at Macy's Herald Square, all right? So if you can't get online, go into the store, get yourself a Jamba Juice as well. They are not a sponsor of this podcast, but we say them every now and then because we want them to be.
Sure.
And don't forget, all Tommy John underwear is backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. The best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. So what have you got to lose? Nothing is the answer to that fucking question. Change out of that ridiculous, ill-fitting multi-pack underwear and into Tommy John. No adjustment needed. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/ALN to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/ALN for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/ALN. Brad, what is it one more time?
I believe that's TommyJohn.com/ALN.
And now, back to the episode.
I can love it.
Who were your influences when you got into comedy?
When I was a kid, I loved Jerry Lewis. I loved Abbott and Costello. I loved movies. Too. I liked those silly movies.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I never really watched stand-up. You know, like even the Tonight Show when, you know, I mean, I liked Brenner. Brenner made me laugh. Robert Klein was the first stand-up that I noticed. A guy writes material. He's talking about himself and this and that. And I loved Robert Klein. And he was the first HBO special. Mel Brooks really inspired me a lot because of spoofing, you know, and that's what I do. I spoof movies and stuff like that. And I loved Rich Little too. I mean, only because of impressions, you know, and then I saw other comics can do impressions later on. But when I came out to LA and, you know, I wanted to be an actor. I didn't think about being a stand-up. But I was always a funny kid and, you know, class clown and could always make people laugh. And as a waiter, some of the stuff I wound up doing on stage, I was doing for my customers.
Of course.
You know? So somebody said to me, hey, you know, the comedy store has Monday night, it's free to get in. You see the amateurs, and then you stick around and you watch the pros go on, you know, in the OR and whatnot. So I went and I saw Jim Carrey and Dice, and they both used music in their act. And Jim did impressions, and he did bits, and he used props. And I was like, shit, I could do something like this. So I put something together and then went the next week and auditioned, and Mitzi hired me.
Immediately?
Yeah. But this is the thing. I didn't use music. I hummed it, okay? I wasn't into music as a kid. I didn't have a stereo. I didn't grow up with a stereo or listen to music or anything like that. So I did this Indiana Jones bit. Raiders of the Lost Ark was like, you know, I think it was the second movie. And I filled up a garbage bag with air and made it a boulder. I had a jacket with spiders sewn on the back and a hat, you know. Boulder, right? And it was just ridiculous and very childlike. And Mitzi loved it and hired me. So now I'm the doorman. I'm making $25 as a doorman. And I'm getting spots out in Westwood.
Do you quit your waiter job?
Quit my waiter job, yeah.
Awesome.
And then Mitzi hired me as the runner. And I didn't have a car. I had a Honda Passport.
Nice.
So my prop bag was this big. It was like 3 inches. It was a small bag. It was only what could fit on the Honda Passport. So as the runner, I got to use the Comedy Store truck, which I actually killed it. I ran it into the ground. I didn't know how to drive a stick. I said I did, and I didn't. It fucking
of course. You always say you did.
Yeah. And I heard,
say I can play squash on my resume.
It was David Letterman's truck. He sold it to the Comedy Store, and they're like, oh, you fucking killed Letterman's truck. But I remember Mitzi wanted me to get something at Tower Records on Sunset Boulevard, and I'd never been in there before. And I wasn't into music. I go in there to get something for her, and I see the section of soundtracks. I didn't even know that you could buy soundtracks to movies.
Because you hadn't been around music.
And I'm in the aisle, and it was like that Zolly shot in Jaws when he's on the beach and the kid is getting eaten.
Yeah.
That's called a Zolly. It zooms in and pulls back at the same time, you know? So as they're zooming in, they're pulling it back on the track. And I just start grabbing albums, and I'm grabbing Rocky, and I'm grabbing Jaws, and Superman, and Risky Business. I could do this, you know, and Yentl, and like I'm buying all these. And Laura was my just friend at the time. We weren't even dating, and she had a stereo with a cassette player, you know, that you could record.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do, is I'd play the cue and hit record, and then like, okay, that's good enough, and I'd pause, and then I get the next cue ready, and I cut it together.
Holy shit.
So now I've got this act I'm going to try for the first time, and Westwood closed, okay? So Mitzi had
Comedy Store in Westwood.
Yeah, so she had to give me a spot in the OR, and I'm on really late. I'm on at like 11 o'clock, and I'm following Richard Pryor, Rodney, and Robin Williams.
So one, a bunch of nobodies.
One right after another.
God.
One right after another. And Harris,
all crushing, yeah.
And Harris Pete was the MC that night, right? So I'm nervous, like, you know, a lot of people were walking out. And I went, and it's the first night I did my Rocky bit and all that. And I got a standing ovation. And Mitzi was still there. And she grabbed me by the hand and goes, "You're not the fucking runner. You're a fucking headliner." And that weekend, I was in both shows in the OR and both shows in the main room. There were two shows a night in both rooms. And she would take me, thank God I had 4 eggs in my bag because I was able to do a Rocky bit, you know. And then I was, and then Vegas opened, like, you know, a month later. So next thing you know, I'm headlining in Vegas.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was cool.
Robin or Richard see your act? I mean, did you chat
Richard
with him?
Used to love to watch my, Robin followed me a couple of times in the main room, and he would use my props. So I'm standing in the back of the room in Rocky trunks with my pants on stage and my shoes on stage. Yeah. And Robin's doing an hour, and he's just like, "Harry, do you mind?" And everything wound up by his penis. Like, he, you know, I had a blowtorch because I did flash dance. Oh, look at this. And everything would always wind up by his penis. But it's so great to see him just pick up something and put it on his head and do a character.
Well, because I mean, his idol is Jonathan Winters, and there's that great clip of Jonathan Winters. I forget what, maybe the Mike Wallace show.
With a stick.
Yeah, just a stick.
Yeah,
and
Jack Parr hands him a stick.
Jack Parr, that's right. Yeah. And they just hand Jonathan Winters a stick and said, "This guy's really funny. He can just do things. Like, just hand him a stick." And then Jonathan Winters goes off on, like,
He does a fisherman bit. He does a getting shot with an arrow.
He does like seven minutes of just comedy with a stick. And it's just insane.
Comedy with a stick.
Right.
It's at the mall.
Yeah.
Hot dog on a stick, comedy with a stick.
Did you know, watching Robin, that he was, I mean, everybody did, yeah? I mean, could you just tell? I mean, I guess,
you know,
Mitzi put you guys in a group like that. I guess you can just see
talent. Well, he was royalty. You know, he was royalty, and Richard was royalty. And then there were, like, every once in a while, Rodney would stop in. And then there were still guys like Belzer, who was almost burnt out at the time because he was kind of, you know, did drugs and stuff like that. But then him getting on the show Homicide on the Street, he played that character Munch for, like, I think 20 years on 3 different TV shows. But it was cool to watch guys like him. I mean, he inspired so many comedians, Belzer. You know, there's that whole, "Hey, babe, how's it going?" You know, that whole attitude kind of comic. And then you'd see the New York guys that would come out that you know, maybe didn't start at the store, but were already established at the clubs in the city, you know, that would come in from time. Like Gilbert, you know, it was great to watch Gilbert, you know, back then. And
Please tell me you have a Gilbert impression.
Oh, listen, I don't know. Listen, I directed him in 3 movies, and he doesn't know my name. He would never. Gilbert doesn't say people's names.
Who are you?
Like, when he's on Howard, he doesn't go, "Howard, how about," he just talks to you. He just, like, starts to talk. What if, you know, not like, "Hey, Harry," or "Hey, what if I," you know. So, but he just makes me cry, man. He makes me cry laughing. Yeah, he's so funny.
He's always been that. I mean, caricature-y.
He's
a
little, he's quiet off stage. You know, now he's married and he's got 2 beautiful children. And, but he was into porn and just was into kind of, like, you know, sick kind of shit.
I love babysitter porn.
Yeah.
Or POV.
Did you have, like, the way that we do now at comedy clubs, and just, I mean, and even, like, you know, which has been fun when we do Vegas, to, like, do karaoke in the green room and hang? Like, what were your hangs like at the Comedy Store? Like,
well, it was always the store. You know, that was the place. Like, I didn't go on the road too much because I made so much money off of Mitzi. Mm-hmm. So between, I mean, you know, I would call in for, you know, spots, and I could make $900 for the week. So I'd stay in town and be able to go up for things.
Yeah.
Today, you got to go on the road. Like, I always say to guys, I even remember saying this to Theo Vaughn. I worked with Theo in Tahoe, like, maybe 8 years ago, and he was featuring for me. And I said, "Man, you're great. Just stick in town. Stay in town. Go up for shit. Stay in town for pilot season. Get, you know, get TV work. The road will always be there. Go on the road when you've got more credits and you'll make more money. You don't have to be doing it all the time." I've seen so many guys that I love that I always called young comics, and they're already hitting 40, and they've never gotten their shot yet. I mean, they've done some TV
because they did the road so much,
and they're still doing it. And I'm like, man, you know, you gotta be in town. You gotta go. I mean, you know, go up for stuff. And it may not be one agent. It may be 3 agents that you have. I mean, it was like that back in the day. I'd always find somebody that was great at stand up, And you go, fuck, they're not getting me up for any sitcoms, right?
It is a trade-off. I mean,
or movies. I wanted to go up for movies.
I mean, you know, Adam Devine, that's the way he's done it, where just getting all the acting stuff and then stand-up now. But also, that's not everybody. Not everybody can, you know, 7 years into stand-up, get a show and then have that lead to everything so that they can just kind of stay away from the road. But, like, you know, the first time I auditioned for Curb Your Enthusiasm, I was on the road and they asked me to come in and I was texting with Jeff Garland and I was like, God, it's like, is there any, like, do you think this will, like, do you know what's going on? I was just like, what should I do? I'm in Kansas City. I just got here. And he goes, dude, that's just one of the risks of and gambles of doing the road. Like, sometimes you miss out on shit. He's like, so you have to ask yourself, is it worth it? Like, sometimes you just got to be around for a while because opportunities in this business are so uncertain and they're going to come when they come. And
I not to pat myself on the back, but I'm the coolest fucking booker when it comes to shit like that. Like, I've got, you know, Brett Ernst has got a TV show, so he can't do the show Monday and he can't do the show Sunday. And this just came about the other day. Chris Redd was booked in Vegas and he got SNL. They said he's up for SNL. No one's allowed to know this, but if he doesn't get it, can he still keep the gig? And I kept waiting, you know, like Monday, I'll fill someone in. I waited and I said, I'll wait all the way to Thursday. Don't worry about it. Wow. And he wound up getting it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm really cool like that. And I remember—
You've helped me out a couple of times.
I remember guys, like bookers that were just pricks about shit like that, you know?
And one thing that the bookers don't understand is that, no, you want me to go do that TV show, so I'll reschedule with you, and when I come back, I'll have a little heat on me, and I'll make you even more money.
I say that about him all the time. I said, you don't understand, this kid's getting hit, and then we'll have to be paying him a lot more money, but he'll be loyal and he'll play us. We'll put him in the theater or anything like that, you know. And I think about that with guys or with acts like that, because Bob Kephart, who had the Comedy Stop, there were guys that were hitting it and they would get to a show. And he would go, well, no, you got to mention us. He goes, but I'm not, but, you know, and he would just be a real prick about it. So as soon as these guys hit, they never went back to his club again, you know, and he'd lose them.
Yeah.
You know, he thought it was all about him, you know.
Now, like, you saw, obviously, the comedy boom in the 80s. I think we're in a comedy boom right now. Okay.
Totally. Yeah.
And from someone who saw it in the 80s,
we haven't seen the original boom, so we don't know what to compare to.
Well, like I said, the great thing about then is, though, you could do something, you know, you could do one TV appearance and have your own special. You do, I was in Montreal with Tim Allen when he got a Showtime special, and then he got his ABC deal from Montreal.
Wow.
You know, and you'd see guys just kill it, and you go, oh, they're the next big thing. The one guy that I always remembered being like, oh, he's a superstar. Everyone knew Jim Carrey was going to be a monster. But he had this act. He had this act, this impressionist act, and he would do singing impressions, and he would close with On Golden Pond, and he would get standing ovations. And it was this great, like, Vegas-y kind of act. And then he wound up getting, you know, his own show, The Duck Factory. Mm-hmm. He did a few movies, but it didn't really happen for him. And Kinison gave him a hard time. Ah, you're doing that Fred Travellina shit. So Jim threw away this standing ovation act that he could open for anybody that he wanted and was just going on stage and just doing shit and dying and bombing. And the comics would watch from the back of the room and go, oh my God, he is so brave. We all knew how talented he was.
Yeah, but so you were recognizing the bravery.
Oh my God, he's doing this. He's talking out of his ass, like the thing that he did.
Ace Ventura.
Yeah, that came from him talking about the Rodney King trial and the cops. I forgot one of the cops that got off of the beating. He says, oh, you see him on the news. It's like he's talking out of his ass. And he turns around and he starts doing the bit, you know. So you're seeing Jim just shopping. You know, I remember Jeff Altman says, oh my God, don't you get the idea that he's just shopping up there? He doesn't know where it's going to come from. Mm-hmm. And then he wound up doing a movie called Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yep.
With Jeff Goldblum and Damon Wayans.
Yep.
And then Damon and him became really tight on that. And as a matter of fact, they went to Jeff Goldblum's acting class and he kicked them out because they were like little kids. You know what I mean? and
to Jim, be in that class.
And Jim does a great impression of him, you know.
Of Goldblum.
Yeah. You know, yeah. You know, whatever, you know, that kind of energy. And he kicked them out of the class. And then Damon wound up getting on In Living Color, which Keenan created and was going to be on, and they wanted a white guy. And I auditioned for it, and I learned my lesson from SNL. I went in with all these impressions right. and everything, and they were great. They were asking, they brought me back. And I remember I was in Vegas, so I had to fly back to do the gig, and somebody's going, how did your audition go? Oh, man, I really think I got it. This is going to be great. And from the other room, I hear, well, what are you up for? And I said, oh, there's a show called The Living Color. And it's Jim Carrey. I was working with him that week. He goes, oh, man, I'm up for that, too. And I'm going, oh, you got it. Bye-bye. You fucking got it. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, damn it. Because they're probably only going to have one white guy.
I was also with Jim Carrey another week. We went and saw Batman, the original Batman with
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
And we came out of it, and we were all like, I think the Funny Boys was with us as well, Jonathan Schmock and Jim Valerie, who is a showrunner. I think he, Arrested Development, Jim Valerie was the showrunner, that brilliant writer. And we're all high, and we're talking about it, and Jim is doing Nicholson, and you could just see he's really into, like, he was just impressed with this thing. And then years later, to see that he wound up being the Joker or a villain, you know, in a Batman movie. But I remember he talked about going to see the movie in Vegas with some comics on the press junket, you know, and just how he just loved the character and would, you know, love to get in the head of a villain.
I mean, he definitely, sure, you know, and everything he's done, I mean, like the highest level of commitment, you know, like to where, like liar, nobody could do that but
he
him.
Has so many buttons that he can press and make himself do something. Like, you know, when you see an actor does this one performance, they go, I never knew I had it in me, or the director brought it out of me. Jim has so many levels. He can do so much. He can sing, he can dance, he could do drama, he could do all kinds of comedy.
Yeah, look at the
Mask.
That's crazy. To go from The Mask to like Eternal Sunshine, like for anybody that, like, I have a real hard time with people that forget so many great things and focus on one thing they don't like and use that to judge, like whether it was, like, I think he did a movie called like Number 23 or Mr. Popper's Penguins.
It was a thriller.
Something that they're like, oh, Jim Carrey's like, I'm like, dude, can you focus on the billions of things that he's done that have been incredible?
I'm really enjoying I'm Dying Up Here, you know, because,
well, you lived it.
I lived it, and I mean I came after that, but it's just great that there's a show about that. I like, you know, and there's some characters that are not that likable, you know, and the Melissa Leah character. I mean, I keep thinking of Mitzi, but Mitzi was funny, you know. She's hard, and she's always counting money and smoking cigarettes, you know. But I love seeing that, and I'm really excited to see that Jim develop something, because Jim has never really developed his own projects. Mm-mm. Like, you know, Jim, even Eddie Murphy had his own production company, so they'd find, you know, projects for him, and that's how you can do really good things. Like Billy Crystal created a lot of his best stuff. I would have liked to have seen Jim do more of that, because he's so talented. But, you know, again, sometimes you may not have the head for that, you know. Robin didn't. Robin developed one project, and it was Mrs. Doubtfire, you know.
He would just get cast.
And the amazing thing about Robin is, you know, Robin, all of his hits were drama. You know,
Good Will Hunting.
But even before that, you know, Moscow on the Hudson, Garp. There were always comedic overtones. Even Good Morning Vietnam had some of his stand-up persona in there, but it was a drama. It was a, you know, comedy drama, dramedy.
How did you guys view him when you saw him doing that? Were you?
Everyone knew he was just a brilliant actor. Yeah. You know,
you weren't like, what's he doing?
But his comedies were stupid. You know, like he did one with Kurt Russell where they tried to relive a football game. He did one called Volunteers with Walter Matthau, Club Paradise. They couldn't find a comedy that worked for him. Mrs. Doubtfire was the first bona fide comedy, Robin Williams comedy, and then The Birdcage, and then other movies he worked, you know, but he was just such a great actor, you know.
When you co-wrote Ladybugs, right?
Yeah.
Which, when you told me that, like, hey man,
God, I love that movie.
I've seen and been a part of a lot of cool things. That's in the top five. When you told me, I remember we were driving to press, and in my mind, that's no joke, one of my top 10 favorite movies. That's fucking crazy.
Oh, thanks. So, you know what's funny about that is before Jimmy Fallon had his new show, when he had his old show that was on late at night, he had Oliver Stone on, and they were talking about a project, and he goes, what about comedy? He goes, do you like comedies? He goes, oh, I love comedies. What's your favorite you know, comedy. He goes, well, you're going to laugh when I say this. And he goes, Ladybugs, right?
Oh, my God.
And with Rodney Dangerfield, he goes, yeah, I love that movie. And, you know, I was going to do another movie with Rodney called Meet Wally Sparks. Yeah. I was going to direct it. And that's another one that I wrote.
Yeah.
So I was with Jackson Purdue. We were playing the Comedy Store in La Jolla. And he goes, I'm watching fucking Oliver Stone just mention two of your movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But,
that's insane. Well, like... Ladybugs was so great, and if you don't know the movie, Rodney is a girls' soccer coach. It's very like, if you liked the Mighty Ducks, just know that the Mighty Ducks is a ripoff of Ladybugs, only instead of hockey, or instead of soccer, it's hockey, and instead of girls, it's boys.
Well,
it's the same thing.
Yeah, well, what you know, and it's also a little bit of Bad News Bears in there, and it's a farce, but it was produced by Albert Ruddy, who produced The Godfather and Million Dollar Baby.
Jeez.
And the longest, the original Longest Yard and Cannonball Run, right? So, and I got to join the Writers Guild from that movie. So it was originally a script that he had developed, and then it got to Rodney. And Rodney, Harry, what do you think of this? And I had all these ideas and these set pieces, so we got hired to rewrite the script and turn it into the Rodney Dangerfield movie. And so I got here. I am working with Al Ruddy, the producer of The Godfather, Gray Fredrickson, producer of Godfather 1, 2, 3, you know, line producer. And I'm working with these great people, and I'm joining the Writers Guild. And the kid who was the star, Jonathan Brandis, who was a wonderful actor.
He was unbelievable.
It was between him and another actor, another good-looking kid that we loved. And Roddy and I had the pictures up on the wall. He was staying at the Beverly Hilton Hotel at the time. And the other kid was fantastic, too. But he was, when he did the girly voice, his voice was, you know, a little high, and it wasn't as funny
cartoony.
As Jonathan Brandis had a deep voice, and it was hard for him to hide that, and we thought that was hysterical. So we passed on the other kid, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh.
And as a matter of fact, I remember him doing an interview where he says that a lot of the parts that he lost out to, those two actors are now dead, River Phoenix and Jonathan Brandis.
So what you're saying is that Leonardo DiCaprio killed Jonathan Brandis and River Phoenix.
I heard
it here first.
Harry Basil starts
a conspiracy.
I heard he was really bummed that he didn't get the part. He really wanted the part. He was on Growing Pains at the time. And then cut to, like, you know, a couple months later, he gets Boy's Life with This Boy's Life, whatever, with De Niro. So, I mean, that's
let that be a lesson to all you gorgeous young boys.
Yeah,
if you're
out there
and you think one job is it might, you know, there's another one coming around the corner.
And it seemed a little
those were the true Growing Pains.
It seemed a little gay that we had these two, like, heartthrob. Because these kids, the two of them were on the cover of every
Teen Bop, Teen Beat, all that Tiger stuff.
And the girl was Vanessa Shaw, who wound up doing a lot of movies. She was the prostitute in Eyes Wide Shut, Walking on the Street. Remember that?
Geez.
And then she was in The Hills Have Eyes. She's the the daughter that gets killed in the Winnebago.
It's gotta be insane for you to watch those movies then.
Well, it's wild when you see, you know, people that, like, we passed and Meet Wally Sparks. We passed for the governor's daughter. We passed on Hilary Swank.
What you're trying to say is, if Harry Basil doesn't cast
that happens all the time.
You will get an Oscar one day.
Yeah.
You think when Leo went back to the set of Growing Pains that somebody said to him, like, hey, just these are the Growing Pains, Leo, that you're going to have to go through.
Yeah, you know.
You do so many great impressions, and we end our pods when we have this at our disposal by prank calling a Thai restaurant that I order from.
Oh, really?
In one of your many brilliant impressions. So, first of all, let's give us 10.
I'm a little dehydrated here.
Yeah, so tell our listeners the impressions that you enjoyed, like, I mean, start listening to the ones you can do and then the ones that you love to do, and we'll narrow down from there.
Well, this one I can't do anymore because he's dead, but I once called up Frank Sinatra as Jerry Lewis, and I got him on the phone. He was at Bally's. But I do Jerry, like, the older Jerry, the genius, the telethon Jerry. So I called Bally's, and I remember it was playing the Dunes, the Comedy Store, and I call over, and I go, could I have the dressing room, please, Frank Sinatra's dressing room? And they're like, who is this? This is Jerry Lewis. I was there last week with the little black Jew lady. Come on, get me Frank, you know? And I wound up getting all the way through. And that was a fun voice, but I'm trying to think of who can I do? I sound like Michael Vincent Gazzo right now from Godfather. I was in the Olive Oil. Michael Corleone did this. Michael Corleone did that. I said, yeah, sure.
You do De Niro, right?
Yeah, but that's more face.
Yeah,
more of a face thing, you know. I don't really have that voice down.
Yeah, I know that on one of the television specials, you opened up reading children's books as Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold, yeah. I still do that, but now listen, this is the thing. I haven't, you know, I'm still directing. I'm writing a movie right now. Love It Second Bite for George Hamilton. You know,
Ashley.
Yeah. So, and I'm hoping to get attached as director. And we're really, like, tomorrow's like a joke punch up day. I'm going over to George's.
Good
and
for you.
I'm hoping I get connected. But if anything, it's cool to just see the movie get made. You know, and
fuck yeah,
being a writer on and all.
Do you love that process?
I still love making movies and doing all that kind of stuff. But the club stuff is fun too, because I get to hang with guys and see talent. If I do get directed, is a great part that I want the two of you guys to play.
Well, 1,010% done. Are you kidding me? Done and done. Verbally committing.
There's a scene where Dracula is walking down Hollywood Boulevard and he gets mistaken as a character. Like somebody wants to take a picture with him, you know, and give him $5. And two other street characters are pissed off because they think he's working their corner. And one's dressed like the Wolfman and the other's dressed like Dracula. And there's a whole big set piece that happens.
So he wants to fight Dracula.
Yeah, Dracula. And done. Then he fucking uses his powers on you and, you know, beats the shit out of you.
I've done the movie before. No, no big deal.
But let me see, who the hell can I do?
You were doing Tony Montana over earlier.
Our face. Could be good.
Hello, this is Hannibal Lecter. I'd like to order some Thai food. Hello, Clarice. Maybe we'll do that one.
Yeah, you want to do that one?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna call and then I'm gonna hand you the phone and we're gonna put it on speakerphone.
Yeah, and just know that we give this Thai place a lot of business. So don't worry about it.
Hello, I'd like to place an order, please. This is Hannibal Lecter. Do you have fava beans?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I would like to place an order. A Thai order. One of your waiters, please. Hello, Clarice.
Yes?
Clarice. That awful screaming of the lambs. Do you have lamb?
Live?
Do you have lamb?
Lime? No, we don't
lamb.
Have
lamb. Raw lamb, please.
Lamb?
You know what you look like to me with your good bag and your cheap shoes? You look like a rube. Hello, Clarice. Szechuan chicken. I guess pad thai. And chicken... Hello, Clarice. Go back to Agent. Go back, Agent Starling. Fly back. Fly, 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 fly. Do you take credit cards?
Yes.
Are you guys really placing an order? Oh, okay. You guys are mean. You guys are
no. Hey, we didn't say
business. Oh, you do give them
business. Not a pad thai that's rolled through this apartment.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. More pad thai than ladies, unfortunately.
Now, Rodney, I just want to say one last thing.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Rodney loved little people. You know, he liked.
Did he really?
Yeah, he loved to do jokes about them, and he loved to use them in his movies. The opening scene, Ladybugs, is we need a fuck. And I got to say the M word.
That's
man, we need a fucking midget. Okay,
he said
we
got to
put a midget in this scene. All right. And then we wind up doing another movie. We had Tony Cox and then Back by Midnight.
So good.
And Back by Midnight is a real stupid comedy I directed and wrote with Rodney, but it has like Christy Allen in it and Randy Quaid. And I put a ton of comics. It's like Harlan Williams is fucking hysterical in the movie, and Tony Cox is in the movie. And we wrote this line where Rodney's in a restaurant with Tony Cox and Nell Carter. It was the last thing Nell Carter did. She was a waitress. And Rodney's the warden of a prison. And what he's doing is he sends all of his inmates out to steal things to fix up the prison. But they're robbing it from the warden. He owns a chain of department stores. So he takes the guard out, and the guard doesn't know about it. And Rodney's in a restaurant, and he's like stalling. And Tony Cox is a sweet little guy. And he was in Me, Myself, and Irene.
Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Beat up Jim Carrey with the nunchucks.
Right.
Anyway, so Rodney wrote this line, and Rodney keeps ordering things. Nell Carter's pissed off, and then it comes time for him to do a line. He goes, "Ma'am, when you get a chance, could I just have a glass of water?" Tony Cox says, and Nell Carter looks at him and says, "Now, don't you start, you half a motherfucker." And Rodney's like, "Man, it's the funniest fucking line in the movie." Okay. And then we did a test screening, and someone said it was mean, so they cut it out. They cut it out.
Oh.
Yeah,
that's I would be honored to be called half a motherfucker.
But it was just
to think we're the PC.
But he gave her the line reading, you half a motherfucker.
I love that.
I feel like we've just scratched the surface. So next time you're back in LA, you just gotta come on. I mean, this
we'll do it again.
An hour and change flew by. So
thank you so much, guys. You guys are awesome. Yeah. I love all your work, and I listen to a couple of the shows too. And you guys do a great job.
Oh, great! Well, thanks. And if you guys are in Vegas, go to the Laugh Factory. Go inside the Tropicana.
It's the best club in town.
Always good shows. Two shows a night. Hell, if you're there on a night that Rich Little is there, you can see Rich Little and then whoever the headline.
And then half a motherfucker.
We got Brett Ernst.
You can see half a motherfucker.
Brett Ernst is in Vegas this week, but I'm playing the Reno.
If anyone
in Reno want to come see me, I'm going to be there Tuesday, November 7th through 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th.
Go see Harry live.
Silver Legacy.
Like we've said, you will never be bored.
Oh, thanks.
You're never just sitting there going like, well, this guy's eating shit. Like, you'll never say that if you're at a Harry Basil show.
Thank you.
And the Trop, too, and not just the club. I mean, it's great that, like, I mean, last time I was there, they opened that beach club and 50 Cent was there, and it's like, it's turning into, like, a younger spot, which is really great. Not
only
for the
cool
comedy
restaurant, we got a cool new restaurant too. And
I just went to it.
Yeah,
Robert Irvine.
Yeah.
I ate there three times when I was there.
It was
really good.
So good. Yeah, good bar too. They got a lot of beers and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So go get
buddy,
messed up.
Listen and go to La Factory on Hollywood, buddy. And we need the people to come to La Factory, Long Beach, on La Factory, Chicago, buddy.
Tell them about website, buddy.
Listen. Buddy, there are more than one way to shave a cat.
Good night, everybody.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more episodes on iTunes or your phone. Subscribe and tell your family and everyone you know. But what should I tell them? Well, you can just tell them that thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.